for Hound of the Baskervilles.
My friend, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, was usually very late in the mornings, save on those not too infrequent occasions when he stayed up all night. One morning, it was in the autumn of 1889, he was seated at the breakfast table in his dressing gown. I was standing on the hearth rug, looking at a stick which a visitor had left at our Baker Street rooms the night before. It was a fine, thick piece of wood, bulbous-headed, of the sort that used to be known as a Penang lawyer. Holmes was sitting with his back to me, and I'd given him no sign of my occupation.
Well, Watson, what do you make of it?
Good heavens, Holmes. How'd you know what I was doing? You must have eyes at the back of your head.
Hardly that. But at least I have a well-polished, silver-plated coffee pot in front of me.
Oh, I see.
Tell me, Watson, what do you make of that stick? We missed its owner yesterday and have no idea of his errand, so this accidental souvenir assumes some importance. Let me hear you reconstruct the man by an examination of it. Just follow my method.
I think he's an elderly medical man.
Why?
Because the inscription on the silver band to James Mortimer, M.R.C.S., from his friends of the CCH, 1884.
Excellent. What else?
I'd say he's a country practitioner who does a great deal of his visiting on foot.
Oh, why that?
Well, because the thick iron ferrule has been worn down and the whole stick's been terribly knocked about. I can't see a town doctor carrying it.
Perfectly sound. And what about the friends of the CCH?
Well, I think that's the something Hunt, whatever the local Hunt's called. He's probably helped them professionally and they gave him this stick in return.
Really, Watson, you excel yourself. Most stimulating.
Oh.
And now that I've finished breakfast, I'd like to have a look at that stick myself. Just hand me over my convex lens, will you?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, let me see. Interesting, though elementary. Yes, it gives us the basis for several deductions.
Have I missed anything?
I'm afraid, my dear Watson, that most of your conclusions are erroneous. When I said you stimulated me, I meant, to be frank, that your fallacies sometimes guide me towards the truth. Not that you're entirely wrong. The man is certainly a country practitioner.
Ah, then I was right.
To that extent.
Where did I go wrong, then?
Well, for one thing, I would suggest that a presentation to a doctor is more likely to come from a hospital than from a Hunt. And when the initial CC are placed before that hospital, the words Charing Cross naturally suggest themselves.
You may be right.
The probability lies in that direction. And since the presentation was made but 5 years ago, there emerges a young fellow under 30, amiable, absent-minded, and with a favorite dog, something between a terrier and a mastiff.
Now, just a minute, Holmes. How do you know he's amiable, absent-minded, and has a dog?
Well, it's my experience that only amiable men receive testimonials. And he was absent-minded enough to leave his stick here yesterday.
Oh, true. Well, what about the dog?
Look at the teeth marks on the stick. See?
As
I say, they're too broad for a terrier, not broad enough for a mastiff. Let me take it over to the light.
Yes, by Jove, it's a curly-haired spaniel.
My dear fellow, how can you possibly be sure of that?
Simply by looking out of the window. Dog and owner are on our very doorstep. He's a tall, thin man, a bit bent at the shoulders. Oh, yes, and his frock coat's a bit worn. That's all I could see.
Well, I better leave you.
No, don't move, I beg you, Watson. He's a professional brother of yours, and you may be able to help us. Now is the dramatic moment of fate, Watson. A man is walking into our lives, and we don't know whether for good or ill. What does this unknown man of science want of Sherlock Holmes?
Come in.
Ah, you have my stick. I'm so very glad. I wasn't sure whether I'd left it here or in the shipping office. I wouldn't lose that stick for the world.
A presentation, I see.
Yes, sir.
From Charing Cross Hospital?
Yes.
Ah, then we're not so far wrong. Dr.
Mortimer. James Mortimer.
Yes, sir.
I'm now in practice in Devon at Grimpen on Dartmoor. I am pleased to meet you, Mr. Holmes. You interest me very much.
Indeed?
Yes. I had hardly expected so dolicocephalic a skull.
or such well-marked supraorbital development. Would you object to my running my fingers along your parietal fissure?
I would, sir.
It's not my intention to be fulsome, but I must confess I covet your skull.
Pray take a chair.
Thank you.
Now, sir, I presume it wasn't merely for the purpose of examining my skull that you've done me the honor to call here last night and again today.
No, Mr. Holmes. I came to you because I am confronted with a most serious and extraordinary problem. And recognizing as I do that you are the second highest expert in Europe...
Indeed, sir. May I inquire who has the honor to be the first?
To the man of precisely scientific mind, the work of Monsieur Bertillon must always appeal strongly.
Then had you not better consult him?
I said, sir, to the precisely scientific mind. As a man of practical affairs, it's acknowledged that you stand alone. I trust I have not inadvertently...
Just a little.
Oh,
I think, Dr. Mortimer, you'd do well to avoid further preamble and tell Dr. Watson and myself the exact nature of the problem in which you ask my assistance.
Well, gentlemen, I have in my pocket an old manuscript.
I observed it as you entered the room. Early 18th century, unless it's a forgery.
How can you say that, sir?
It's been showing from your pocket as you've been talking.
Oh.
To an expert, the writing gives its date to within a decade. I should put it at 1730.
The exact date is 1742.
Oh, well done, Holmes.
It's a family document. It was committed to my care by Sir Charles Baskerville, who died some 3 months ago in Devon.
Ah, yes, I remember reading about that.
Mr. Holmes, until his sudden and tragic death, Sir Charles was a patient and also my personal friend. He was strong-minded, shrewd, practical, and as unimaginative as I am.
Oh,
but he took this document very seriously and was prepared for just such an end as eventually did overtake...
What's in the document?
A certain legend that runs in the Baskerville family. With your permission, I will give you the gist of what it contains.
If you think it necessary.
Oh, it is, I assure you. It tells the story of the death of Hugo Baskerville, who held the manor at the time of the Great Rebellion. Hugo, Mr. Holmes, was a wild, profane, and godless man. His name was a byword in the West. It happened that he fell in love with the daughter of a yeoman who held lands near the Baskerville estate. This girl avoided him, and one Michaelmas he stole down upon the farm with 5 or 6 wicked companions and carried her off to the hall. They put her in an upper room and sat down to a long carousal. The girl, in the stress of her fear, climbed down the ivy that still covers the south wall and set off homeward across the moor.
Go on.
Some time later, Hugo went upstairs to see his captive and found her gone. And here I think I must quote the manuscript itself. Then it would seem he became as one that hath a devil, for rushing downstairs into the dining hall, he sprang upon the table, flagons and trenchers flying before him, and he cried aloud before all the company that he would that very night render his body and soul to the powers of evil if he might but overtake the wench. And at that, Mr. Holmes, this wicked man ran from the house and had his groom saddle his horse and unkennel the pack.
You mean you put the hounds on her?
He did. He gave them the girl's handkerchief and set off full cry in the moonlight over the moor.
But good heavens, didn't the others try and stop him?
Well, they just seemed to have stood there, stupefied. But then some sense came back into their minds and they rode off after him. They found Hugo Baskerville's black mare dabbled with froth and riderless. They found the hounds whimpering in a cluster at the head of a dip. 3 of the boldest riders, or maybe the most drunken, rode down into the dip. And there they found the unhappy girl lying dead with fear and fatigue.
Poor girl.
But it wasn't that that raised the hair on their heads. Let me quote the actual words again. It was that standing over Hugo and plucking at his throat, there stood a great foul thing, a black beast shaped like a hound, yet larger than any hound that mortal eye had rested upon. And even as they looked, the thing tore out the throat of Hugo Baskerville.
Mm.
Then, as it turned its blazing eyes and dripping jaws upon them, the 3 shrieked with fear and rode for dear life, still screaming, across the moor. One, it is said, died that very night of what he had seen, and the other 2 were but broken men for the rest of their days. the writer ends by counseling his descendants never to cross the moor in those dark hours, as he puts it, when the powers of evil are exalted.
Great.
Well, Mr. Holmes, do you find it interesting?
To a collector of fairy tales?
Aha, but wait. Now we come to something a little more recent. The death of Sir Charles Baskerville in June of this year.
Ah, yes. Yes, I was busy undertaking a small service for the Pope at the time. Otherwise, I should have been able to give the affair more attention.
Well, let me say at once that Sir Charles was a man of very different mould from his infamous ancestor. Many people had good reason to bewail his untimely end.
It was sudden, you say?
Indeed, yes. Not that his health had been good for some time. There was an affection of the heart showing itself in breathlessness and nervous depression.
Was he a married man, Dr. Mortimer?
He was a widower and childless.
Mm-hmm.
He lived very simply. His indoor servants at Baskerville Hall consisted of a couple named Barrymore, who acted as butler and housekeeper. They corroborated my own evidence at the inquest about his health.
What happened?
Well, the facts are quite simple. Every night before he went to bed, Sir Charles used to walk down the famous Yew Alley of Baskerville Hall. On the 4th of June, he declared his intention of starting for London the next day and told Barrymore to pack for him. That night, he went for his walk as usual and never returned.
Who raised the alarm?
Barrymore, the butler. He found the hall door open, became alarmed, and went out with a lantern. Halfway down Yew Alley, there's a gate that leads out onto the moor. Sir Charles's footprints led there, and there was evidence that he had stood there for a while. Then the footprints continued, but appeared to be those of a man...
running for his life? Where did they lead?
To the far end of the alley. And there the body was found.
Any signs of violence?
No, but the face was incredibly distorted. At first, I couldn't believe that it really was Sir Charles.
How do you account for the distortion?
Well, it's a symptom that is not unusual in cases of death from cardiac exhaustion.
Yes, that's true enough. Mm.
The post-mortem showed a long-standing organic disease, and the coroner returned a verdict in accordance. Those are the public facts.
I see. Then can we now have the private ones?
Mr. Holmes, if I give them to you, I should be telling you things I haven't confided to anyone.
Not even to the coroner?
Not even to him.
Why not, pray?
Because I didn't want Baskerville Hall to be untenanted for the rest of its days.
What is this information you withheld? Be frank, sir.
The moor is very sparsely inhabited, and those who live near each other are thrown very much together. Sir Charles and I used to talk and play cards during the evenings. It became increasingly clear to me that his nervous system was strained to breaking point. He'd taken the legend terribly to heart. He would never go out on the moor at night.
You mean he really believed in this phantom hound?
He asked me if I'd ever seen a strange creature at night or heard a hound baying. He asked me that several times, and always in a voice vibrating with excitement.
Did you ever see anything?
One evening, about 3 weeks before he died, I drove up to his house. He was standing at his hall door. Just as I was getting out of my gig, I noticed his eyes fix themselves on something over my shoulder and stare with an expression of horror. He was so excited and alarmed that I had to go down to the spot and look round. But there was nothing. I had to stay with him all the evening. That's when I suggested he should go to London. I thought the distractions of town might bring him back a new man. Mr. Stapleton, a mutual friend, was also very worried about him, and he agreed with me. And then, at the last instant, came this terrible catastrophe.
How soon did you see the body?
Well, they had to send a message over. I was there within the hour. I checked all the facts that were mentioned at the inquest, the footprints, the absence of physical injury, the facial contortion. But Barrymore made one false statement in his evidence.
Oh? What was that?
He said there were no traces on the ground round the body. He didn't see any. I did.
Footprints? A man's or a woman's?
Mr. Holmes, they were the footprints of a gigantic hound.
Great heavens!
There are sheepdogs on the moor. Oh,
no doubt. But this was no sheepdog.
What is this alley like?
Well, there are two lines of old yew hedge. Impenetrable, 12 feet high.
Penetrated at one point by a wicket gate, you say?
Yes, which leads on to the moor.
Is there any other opening?
None.
Was this gate closed?
Closed and padlocked.
How high is it?
About 4 feet.
So anyone could have got over it?
Yes.
Dr. Mortimer, what made you say that Sir Charles had waited by the gate?
His cigar ash. He dropped it there twice.
Excellent. Watson, this is a colleague after my own heart. What other marks were there?
None in particular.
Good heavens, did no one examine?
I did, but I didn't notice anything.
Oh, if only I'd been there. By this time, all that was there will have been smudged by the rain and defaced by the clogs of curious peasants. Oh, Dr. Mortimer, Dr. Mortimer. To think that you didn't call me in. You have indeed much to answer for.
Mr. Holmes, I couldn't have done so without disclosing all these facts to the world. And besides...
Yes?
There is a realm in which the most acute and experienced of detectives is helpless.
But you mean that the thing is supernatural?
I didn't say so.
You evidently think it.
Mr. Holmes, several people have seen a creature on the moor. Something that couldn't be any animal known to science. A huge creature, luminous, spectral.
And you, a trained man of science, believe it to be supernatural?
I don't know what to believe.
Surely the footprints were material.
The original hound was material enough to tear out a man's throat. But it was diabolical as well.
Dr. Mortimer, if you hold these views, why have you come to consult me? You tell me in the same breath that it's useless to investigate Sir Charles's death and that you desire me to do it.
I did not say I desired you to do it.
Oh? Then how can I assist you?
By telling me what to do about Sir Henry Baskerville.
Sir Henry? Is this the heir?
Yes. He's Sir Charles's nephew, the son of his younger brother. He's been traced in Canada. He's been farming there. He arrives at Waterloo in, just under an hour and a quarter.
Are there any other claimants?
No. The only other kinsman we have been able to trace was Roger Baskerville, the youngest of the three brothers, of whom poor Sir Charles was the eldest. He was the black sheep of the family, the very image, so they say, of old Hugo. England became too hot for him, and he died of yellow fever in Central America. Henry's own father, the middle brother, died young, so he is the last of the Baskervilles. I had a wire to say that he arrived at Southampton this morning, and I'm on my way to meet him. Mr. Holmes, what am I to do?
Meet Sir Henry.
And then?
Say nothing to him at all until I've made up my mind on the matter.
Well, how long will that take you?
24 hours. I suggest you call here at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and bring Sir Henry with you.
I'll do that, Mr. Holmes.
Just one more question. You say that before Sir Charles Baskerville's death, several people saw this apparition on the moor.
Yes.
Did anyone see it afterwards?
Not that I've heard.
Thank you, Dr. Mortimer.
Good day, Mr. Holmes. Good day, Dr. Watson.
Good day, Doctor.
I'm very much obliged to you.
Going out, Watson?
Well, unless I can help you.
No, my dear fellow. It's at the hour of action that I turn to you for aid.
Oh, just as you like, Holmes.
When you pass Bradley's, would you ask him to send up a pound of the strongest chag tobacco? Oh, and ask the people next door to him if they have an ordnance map of Dartmoor.
Very well.
Thank you, Watson. Oh, and Watson, It would be as well if you could make it convenient not to return before evening.
I spent the day at my club and didn't return to Baker Street till nearly 9 o'clock in the evening. My first impression when I opened the door was that a fire had broken out. The room was so filled with smoke that the light of the lamp on the table was blurred by it. Through the haze, I had a vague vision of Holmes in his dressing gown, coiled up in an armchair with his black clay pipe between his lips. I left him in peace and took myself off to the more tolerable atmosphere of my bedroom. The next morning, our clients were punctual. As the clock struck 10, Dr. Mortimer was shown up, followed by the young baronet, a man of about 30, sturdily built, with the weather-beaten appearance of one who has spent most of his time in the open air.
Come in, gentlemen, and make yourselves comfortable.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, this is Sir Henry Baskerville.
How do you do, Mr. Holmes?
Sir Henry.
Dr. Watson.
Do, sir.
You know, the strange thing is, if my friend here hadn't proposed coming round to you this morning, I'd have come on my own.
Indeed?
Well, you're the man who thinks out little puzzles, aren't you? Well, I've had one this morning that wants more thinking out than I'm able to give it.
You mean that something has happened since you arrived in London?
Well, nothing of any importance. Maybe it's only a joke. But it was this letter. If you can call it a letter. It reached me by the first post.
Sir Henry Baskerville, Northumberland Hotel, Charing Cross. Who knew you were going to stay there?
Well, no one. We only decided after I met Dr. Mortimer.
But presumably he was already staying there.
No, sir, no. I've been staying with a friend. There was no possible indication that we intended to stay at that hotel.
I see. Well, somebody seems to be deeply interested in your movements. May I read the letter?
Please do. As you'll see, it's only a single sentence.
I notice it's made up of printed words pasted onto a sheet of foolscap. Mm. As you value your life or your reason, keep away from the moor. The word moor is written in ink. It's the only one.
Now, perhaps you'll tell me what in thunder's the meaning of that.
Watson, had you yesterday's Times?
Yes, I think so. Mrs. Hudson,
might I trouble you for the inside page? The one with the leading articles?
Yes, I've got it. Ah, yes. There you are.
Thank you. Stands to reason that such legislation must no longer keep away from you. Ah, yes. Yes, there's a capital article here on free trade. Listen, it stands to reason that such legislation must in the long run keep away wealth from the country, diminish the value of our imports, and lower the general conditions of life in this island. Now, what do you think of that, Sir Henry?
Well, haven't we gone a bit off the trail?
On the contrary. If you read the whole of that article, you would, I'm sure, find all the words of your mysterious letter. The one sentence I have read you already gives us value, reason, keep away, from, and life.
You mean someone cut those words out of the paper and pasted them together?
All except the less common word, moor, which is the one word written in ink.
But, yeah. Mr. Holmes, that's incredible. How did you know it was the Times?
Knowledge of different types is elementary to the special expert in crime. Though I confess that once, when I was very young, I did confuse the Leeds Mercury with the Western Morning News, but the Times is entirely distinctive. Just let me see the note again. Any watermarks? I wonder. No, I don't see any. Now, tell me, Sir Henry, has anything else of interest happened to you since you've been in London?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
You've not observed anyone following you or watching you?
I seem to have walked right into the thick of a dime novel. Now, why in thunder should anyone follow me or watch me?
We're coming to that. You've nothing else to report to us?
Well, no. Well, unless you think it's worth reporting that I've lost one of my boots.
Have you indeed?
Yes, I put them both outside my door last night, and there was only one there this morning. I couldn't get any sense out of the fellow who cleans them.
Well, it seems a singularly useless thing to steal.
Oh, I told him it's bound to turn up again.
Now, look, gentlemen, it seems to me that I've spoken quite enough of the little I know. It's time you kept your promise and told me what we're all driving at.
I quite agree. Dr. Mortimer, will you be good enough to tell Sir Henry your story as you told it to us?
By all means. It begins, Sir Henry, with this manuscript, which has been in the possession of your family for generations.
Well, I seem to have come into an inheritance with a vengeance. Of course, I've heard of the hound since I was in the nursery, but I never thought of taking it seriously. But as to my uncle's death, I can't get it clear yet. You don't seem to have made up your minds whether it's a case for a policeman or a clergyman.
Precisely. The point we have to decide now, though, Sir Henry, is whether or not it's advisable for you to go to Baskerville Hall.
Why shouldn't I?
There seems to be danger.
You mean danger from the family fiend or danger from human beings?
That's what we have to find out.
Well, whichever it is, my answer's fixed. There is no devil in hell, Mr. Holmes, and there is no man on earth who can stop me going to the home of my own people, and you can take that as my final answer.
Bravo!
Now, look, Mr. Holmes, I'd rather like a quiet hour to myself to think about all this.
Of course.
I'll go back to my hotel. Look, why don't you and Dr. Watson come and lunch with us there at 2:00?
Oh, thank you. Is that convenient to you, Watson?
Perfectly.
Then you may expect us. Shall I have a cab, Colby?
No. I prefer to walk. If you'll join me, Dr. Mortimer?
With pleasure.
Well, then we'll meet again at 2. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Thank you.
He seems a good enough cab.
Quick, Watson, while I get my frock coat. Watch at the window and see which way they go.
What do you mean?
Of course. Isn't it clear there are people at their tails? We must shadow them and see what happens. Careful, Watson. They've stopped to look in the shop window. We'd better do the same. No, wait. Look at that handsome cab. It has stopped as well. It's following them. That's our man.
In the cab?
Yes. Let's get a look at him. Oh, curse it. He's seen us. He's shouting to his cabbie.
Let's run off.
Oh, useless.
They've got too good a start. Oh, Watson. If you're an honest man, you can record this and set it against my successes.
Who was the man?
I've no idea. Did you see his face?
All I saw was a big black beard.
Quite so. Probably a false one to conceal his true features. He is at a disadvantage, though.
You mean he's put himself in the power of the cabman?
Exactly.
What a pity we didn't get the number.
My dear Watson, clumsy as I have been, you surely don't imagine that I neglected to get that. 2704 is our man. We must find out by wire the identity of the cabman and arrange to question
him. Well, what about Sir Henry and Dr. Mortimer?
Oh, there's no point in following them now.
Yeah.
Come, Watson, the nearest telegraph office, and then we can drop into one of the Bond Street picture galleries and do what you have done.
Ah, Mr. Holmes. It's just as well you're here. It seems to me they're playing me for a sucker in this hotel. They'll find they've started to monkey with the wrong man.
Well, what's the trouble?
Well, the first boot has been put back, but now another one has gone.
Another one?
Yes. Yes, an old black one this time. It's the last thing I'll lose in this den of thieves. What do you make of it, Mr. Holmes?
I don't profess to understand it yet. This case of yours is very complex, Sir Henry. Did you know you were followed from my rooms this morning?
Followed? By whom?
Well, whoever he was, he informed the cabman that his name was Sherlock Holmes. Dr. Mortimer, have you among your acquaintances on Dartmoor any man with a black full beard?
Let me see. Ah, yes. Barrymore, Sir Charles's butler. He has just such a beard.
Who is this Barrymore?
Oh, his family have looked after the hall for four generations now.
Did Barrymore profit at all by Sir Charles's will, Sir Henry?
Yes, he and his wife had, £500 each.
Ah. Did they know it was coming to them?
Oh, yes. Sir Charles was fond of talking about his will.
Oh, that's very interesting.
I hope you don't suspect everyone who received a legacy from Sir Charles. I myself was left £1,000.
Indeed. And anyone else?
There were a number of small bequests to individuals and charities. The residue all went to Sir Henry here.
Sir Henry, how much was the residue?
£740,000.
Really? I had no idea that so gigantic a sum was involved. It's a stake for which a man might well play a desperate game. One more question, Dr. Mortimer. If anything happened to our young friend here, you'll forgive the unpleasant hypothesis, who would inherit the estate?
Some distant cousins named the Desmonds. James Desmond is an elderly clergyman in Westmoreland.
I see. Tell me, Sir Henry, have the mysterious events of the last few hours caused you to change your mind about Baskerville Hall?
Mr. Holmes, they have just made me all the more determined to go down there the very first moment I can.
Then I only make one provision. You certainly must not go alone.
Dr. Mortimer's going with me.
But Dr. Mortimer has his practice to attend to, and his house is miles away from yours. With all the goodwill in the world, he may not be able to help you. No, Sir Henry, you must take somebody with you. A trusty man who'll be always by your side.
Could you possibly come yourself, Mr. Holmes?
If matters come to a crisis, I should endeavor to be present in person. But my extensive practice and the constant appeals that reach me make it impossible for me to be away from London indefinitely.
Well, whom would you recommend, then?
If my friend Dr. Watson would take it. There is no man better worth having at your side when you're in a tight place. No man can say so more confidently than I.
Well, now, that's real kind of you, Dr. Watson. Look, if you'll come down to Baskerville Hall and see me through, I'll never forget it.
I'll come with pleasure. I don't know how I can employ my time better.
Excellent. Now, Watson, you will report very carefully to me. When a crisis comes, as it will do, I will direct you how to act.
Yes.
Could you start by Saturday?
Does that suit, Dr. Watson?
Oh, perfectly.
Then on Saturday, unless you hear to the contrary, we shall meet at the 10:30 train from Paris.
As the train sped out of Paddington, I looked back at the tall, austere figure of Holmes gazing after us. A pleasant journey it was. And in a very few hours, the brown earth had become ruddy, the brick changed to granite, and And then, over the green squares of the fields and the low curve of a wood, there rose in the distance a grey, melancholy hill with a strange, jagged summit.
There you are, Sir Henry. There's your first view of the moor.
Dartmoor. You know, I've been over a good part of the world, but I've never had a moment to compare with this.
This is your homecoming?
Yes. Yes, but it's more than that. This is where the men of my blood have lived for centuries. Up on those moors. And up there, too, there's something that has haunted them and driven them to their deaths. I know one thing, gentlemen. Whatever it is that lurks up there, whether it's man or fiend, it's not driving me away. I'm going to face it and beat it.
Pray God you may.
Wonderful country, isn't it, Doctor?
Very beautiful. There's autumn in the air, though.
Hello? What's this?
What's the matter?
Look, up there on the skyline.
Huh? Oh, a man on horseback.
Oh, with a rifle.
Yes, he's watching our road. Mm. Perkins!
Sir?
What's that fellow doing up there with the gun?
Oh, there's a convict escaped from the prison, sir.
Oh?
Been out there 3 days now. The warders are watching every road. They've had no sign of him yet. Farmers back here don't like it, sir, and that's a fact.
Well, who is he, then?
Seldon, the Notting Hill murderer.
Seldon?
Who's he?
I expect Dr. Watson remembers.
Oh, I do indeed. Holmes took a great interest in it. It was a peculiarly brutal murder. The death sentence was commuted because there was some doubt as to the man's sanity.
And he's somewhere out there hiding in a burrow like a wild beast. It's all this moor needs, gentlemen. I don't know if it's my imagination, but it's getting mighty cold.
Welcome, Sir Henry. Welcome to Baskerville Hall.
Thank you. You are Barrymore, I take it?
I am, Sir Henry.
I see. Doctor, will you stay for dinner?
No, thank you, if you don't mind. My wife will be expecting me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd stay to show you over the house, but Barrymore will be a better guide than I.
Very well. Perkins. Perkins, take Dr. Mortimer on, will you? Well, au revoir, then, Doctor, and thank you for all the help you've given me.
It's been a pleasure. Goodbye, then. Goodbye, Dr. Watson.
Goodbye, Doctor.
If I can be of any service, don't hesitate to send for me, night or day.
Thank you. Here I am. Oh, Doctor, it's just as I imagined it. Rafters, oak paneling, stag's heads, coats of arms. Isn't it the very picture of an old family home?
Yeah.
And my people have lived here for 500 years.
Excuse me, Sir Henry. Hmm.
Yes, Barrymore?
Would you wish dinner to be served at once, sir?
Is it ready?
In a very few minutes, sir. You will find hot water in your rooms.
Thank you.
Sir, my wife and I will be happy to stay with you until you've made fresh arrangements.
Fresh arrangements? Do you mean your wife and you want to leave?
Only when it's quite convenient to you, sir.
Well, I'd be sorry to start my life here by breaking an old family connection.
I feel that too, sir, and so does my wife.
Well, then, what's the trouble?
To tell the truth, sir, we were both very much attached to Sir Charles, and his death gave us a shock and made these surroundings very painful to us. I'm afraid we could never be easy in our minds at Baskerville Hall again.
What do you plan to do?
Well, I've no doubt, sir, we shall succeed in establishing ourselves in some business. Sir Charles's generosity has given us the means to do it.
I see.
And now, sir, perhaps I'd better show you to your room.
Ah. Good morning, Dr. Watson.
Oh, morning, Sir Henry.
Help yourself.
Yes, have a little kid.
Well, this place doesn't look too bad, does it, with the morning sunlight streaming through the windows? It disturbed me a bit last night. I don't mind admitting. I expect we were tired and chilled and imagined it all.
No, not entirely.
What do you mean?
Did you happen to hear someone sobbing in the night?
Well, that's curious. I did hear something of the sort. I was half asleep, and I thought it was all a dream.
I heard it quite distinctly. A woman sobbing.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Oh, Barrymore. Very good breakfast. Tell me, we both thought we heard a woman crying in the night. Do you know anything about it?
No, Sir Henry. There are only two women here at night. One is the scullery maid who sleeps in the west wing, and the other is my wife. It certainly wasn't her. Can I bring you more coffee, sir?
No, thank you.
Very good, sir Henry.
I don't believe him.
Why not?
I passed Mrs. Barrymore on my way downstairs. Her eyes were red and swollen. It must have been her.
Well, then her husband must have known.
Yeah, exactly. Then why didn't he say so? And why was she crying? She doesn't look an emotional type.
Do you think it was him following me in that cab in Regent Street?
Oh, we'll soon find out.
Oh, how?
When we left you after lunch in London, Holmes sent a telegram to Barrymore with strict instructions that it was to be delivered personally to Barrymore or returned.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd walk over to Grimpen Post Office and have a word with the postmaster. He'll give me something to report to Holmes. Do you feel like a walk?
No. I've got a lot of papers to attend to here. You go on your own. I'll see you back here for lunch.
And with it making off into the darkness, his lordship lets off steam.
I really fancy what you're querying, sir. My boy took the telegram and gave it to Mrs. Barrymore.
Why not to Mr. Barrymore himself, as instructed?
He was up in the loft at the time.
Did anyone see him?
Well, surely his wife ought to know where he is. He got the telegram, didn't he? If there's any mistake, it's for Mr. Barrymore to complain.
Yes. Excuse me, but isn't this Dr. Watson?
Yes, but I don't think I have...
Allow me to introduce myself. Stapleton of Merripit House.
Stapleton, how do you do, sir?
I expect you've heard my name from our mutual friend, Dr. Mortimer.
Yes.
I was just visiting him, and he pointed you out from the window of his surgery. We're homely folk on the moor, and don't wait for formal introductions.
Quite so.
I hope Sir Henry is none the worse for his journey.
He's very well, thank you.
Excellent. Are you going back to Baskerville Hall now, Doctor?
That was my intention.
And then our roads lie together. And just over there, you can see the plume of smoke from here. Mm. That's where I live, Merripit House.
Oh.
It's only a moderate walk from the moor path. If you've a few minutes to spare, I should appreciate the honor of introducing you to my sister.
I promised to get back to lunch.
There was plenty of time.
Well, then, I should be delighted.
Oh, come along, then. It's a wonderful place, the moor.
You
never tire of it. You can't think what secrets it contains.
You know it well, then.
I've been here 2 years. The residents call me a newcomer. But my taste led me to explore every part of the country round. As you can see, I'm a naturalist. Some of the locals laugh at my butterfly net and this tin I always carry with me.
You're a lepidopterist.
So, although I've only recently come here, I should think there are a few men who know the moor better than I do.
But is it so hard to know?
Very hard. For instance, you see that great plain to the north with the hills behind it? Do you observe anything remarkable about it?
It would be a rare place for a gallop.
Ah, naturally you'd think so. The thought has cost folk their lives before now. That is the great Grimpen Mire. A full step there means death to man or beast. Only yesterday I saw one of the moor ponies wander into it. He never came out.
Oh, horrible.
It's dangerous to cross, even in the dry seasons. But after these autumn rains, it's an awful place. Yet I can find my way to the very heart of it and come back alive.
But why should you want to go to such a dreadful place?
Well, you see the hills beyond. They're really islands cut off on all sides by the mire, which has crawled round them in the course of years.
I see, yes.
That is where the rare plants and butterflies are. There are one or two paths as an active man can take.
Well, I'll try my luck someday.
For God's sake, put such an idea out of your mind. You wouldn't have a chance. It's only by remembering very complex landmarks that I can do it.
Good heavens, what was that?
Queer place, the moor.
But what is it, man?
The peasants say it's the hound of the Baskervilles calling for its prey.
It's the weirdest thing I ever heard in my life, and even in India where
it's
peculiar.
It's rather an uncanny place altogether. Look at that hillside.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of those circular rings of stone? What are they? Sheep pens? No, they're the homes of our worthy ancestors. Prehistoric man lived thickly on the moor, and no one in particular has lived there since. So we find all his little arrangements exactly as he left them. Those are his wigwams with a roof off. You can even see his hearth and his couch if you have the curiosity to go inside.
It's quite a town. When was it inhabited?
Neolithic man. No date. Oh, excuse me. Did you see that butterfly? It's a Cyclopides. Very rare. You scarcely ever see them in autumn. I must try and get it.
I say, Mr. Stapleton, do be careful. You tell me how dangerous it...
Well, I suppose he knows what he's doing.
Sir.
Good heavens, I didn't hear anyone.
Go back. Go straight back to London.
Why should I go back?
I can't explain, but for God's sake, do what I ask you. Go back and never set foot on the moor again.
But I've only just come.
Quiet. My brother's coming back. Not a word of what I've said. Would you mind getting me that orchid among the mare's tails? We're very rich in orchids on the moor, though it's getting rather late for them.
Beryl, you've introduced yourselves, I see.
Yes, I was telling Sir Henry that the orchids are nearly over.
That's not Sir Henry Baskerville.
No, only a humble commoner. I'm his friend, Dr. Watson.
Then we've been talking at cross purposes.
Why, you hadn't very much time to talk.
I talked as if Dr. Watson were a resident instead of just a visitor. It can't matter to him whether it's early or late for orchids. Never mind. Do please come and see Merripit House, Doctor.
No, really, thank you. I promised Sir Henry he'll be waiting for me.
Ah, well, it must be a pleasure deferred. Au revoir, Dr. Watson.
Goodbye, sir.
Come, Beryl.
My dear Holmes, I waited until tonight to finish this letter to you, as I did not wish to arouse Sir Henry's curiosity or alarm. I mentioned to him that I met the Stapletons, but not that she had whispered to me this strange warning, thinking that I was Sir Henry myself. Stapleton, I learned, was a schoolmaster in the north, whose school was running well till an epidemic killed three of the boys, and they never recovered from the blow. Sir Henry's in excellent spirits. We've been sitting over the fire and talking, with the portraits of the Baskerville ancestors looking down on us.
It's now nearly 2 o'clock in the morning.
Who's that? Ah, Sir Henry. Anything wrong?
I'm not sure. There was a creaking in the passage outside. Did you not hear it?
Oh, I thought it was just the timbers working in a very rough night.
No, no. Someone went down the passage. I saw a candle and a shadow.
Well, let's go and see.
Yes.
He went this way, round that corner. Come on.
I'm with you.
There you are. There's a light in one of those rooms. They're all empty. I went round them this morning. Shall we surprise him? No. You stay here. I'll go and see. Well, who is it?
Barrymore.
What's he doing?
Seems to be signaling with a candle, I should think, and staring out onto the moor.
Now, ignoring us, we'll be concentrating on kids. John Simmons.
My dear Holmes, little more of consequence to report this morning. No more nocturnal wanderings. And today, Mr. Stapleton and his handsome sister are joining us for luncheon with Dr. Mortimer.
You know, Stapleton, I think this Notting Hill fellow must have got away, don't you?
I'm inclined to agree. Mm. What on earth can he be living on out there? Unless he's catching the moor sheep.
Well, I hope he has got away. The outlying farmers will sleep the better for it.
But Miss Stapleton...
Yes, Sir Henry?
Well, what about you? I mean, I understand your house is very isolated. I wish you'd let me send over Perkins, my groom, to sleep at your house till we know it's all well.
Well, I think
no.
That...
No, Sir Henry. You're very kind, but I won't hear of it. The fellow's either left the district or else he's stumbled into Grimpen Mire.
As you please, Mr. Stapleton. Miss Stapleton, would you care for a little more wine?
No, thank you, Sir Henry.
Good evening. Dear Holmes, a new complication. If we had not enough,
Sir Henry has shown an obvious attachment to Mr. Stapleton's sister. This was clear enough at our first luncheon party, of which I wrote to you earlier, and equally clear was Mr. Stapleton's hostility. Now the thing has moved further. A meeting on the moors between Sir Henry and the sister, interrupted with angry words by the jealous Mr. Stapleton. Otherwise, nothing, but we listen every night for Barrymore to repeat his strange behavior. Not too easy in an old house like this to know a human footstep from the creaking of the timbers, but next time... yes? Uh-huh.
He's gone to that room again. I'm going to challenge him. Bring your revolver.
Very well.
Barrymore, what are you doing here?
No, nothing, sir, nothing. It was the window. I go around at night to see that they're fastened.
On the second floor? Now, look here, Barrymore. We're going to have the truth out of you. What were you doing at that window?
I wasn't doing no harm, sir.
He must have been holding that candle as a signal. Give it to me, Barrymore.
It's not a signal, sir.
Give me that candle. Now let us see if there's any answer.
Here, look.
There it is. By Jove, yes.
Rascal. He still denies the signal.
It's my business, not yours.
Then, by thunder, you'll leave my employment in the morning. Come, Watson. Bring your revolver.
I have it with me.
I'm going to take that man out there, whoever he may be. Oh, this is bitter wind, Watson.
Yeah.
Now, where was that answering light, do you think?
Further up, I feel sure, by the Neolithic hut circle.
Good heavens! What's that, Watson?
I don't know. I heard it once before. It's a sound they have on the moor.
Watson, it was the cry of a hound. The hound of the Baskervilles. Now, Barrymore, to whom were you signaling? Dr. Watson and I go out onto the moor and find some filthy remnants of food and shelter. Who left them there?
Don't ask me, Sir Henry. Don't ask me. I give you my word, sir. It's not my secret.
By thunder, Barrymore. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? Your family has lived with mine under this roof for over 100 years. And here I find you deep in some plot against me.
No. No, sir. Not against you.
Mrs. Barrymore. Why have you come here?
Oh, let me speak, sir.
It's no good, Eliza. We have to go. That's the end of it. You can pack our things.
Oh, John. It's my doing, Sir Henry. He's done nothing except for my sake. I asked him to do it.
Well, speak out, then. What does it mean?
My brother is starving out there on the moor.
Your brother?
We can't let him perish at our very gates, sir. Our light is a signal. We have food for him.
Then your brother is...
The escaped convict, sir. Selden. The criminal. It's
incredible. Is this true, Barrymore?
It is, Sir Henry. Every word of it.
Well, I can't blame you for standing by your own wife, but you must see the man's a public danger.
I give you my word, sir. He'll never trouble anybody in this country again.
Well, how can you say that?
In a very few days, sir, he'll be on his way to South America. If he can only lie quiet till the ship's ready for him. I beg you not to let the police know he's still on the moor.
What do you say, Watson?
Well, if he were safely out of the country, it would relieve the taxpayer of a burden.
Yes, that's true, I suppose. I guess we're aiding and abetting a felony, Watson?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
All the same, I don't feel now I can give the man up, and that's an end of it.
Oh, sir.
Sir Henry.
Yes? What is it now?
You've been so kind to us, sir, that I should like to do the best I can in return. I know something.
What do you mean?
It's about poor Sir Charles's death, sir.
What? Do you know how he died?
No, sir, I don't know that.
Well, what then?
I know why he was at the gate.
Why? Why?
To meet a woman.
A woman?
Yes, sir.
Well, what was her name?
I can't give you that, sir, but I can give you her initials. They were L.L.
How do you know that?
Well, sir, your uncle had a letter that morning. It was from Coombe Tracy and addressed in a woman's hand.
Well?
I thought no more of the matter, sir, but the other day my wife was cleaning out Sir Charles's study
and she found the ashes of a burned letter in the back of the grate. Most of it was charred to pieces, but there was just one slip you could still read.
But what did it say?
Tell Sir Henry, Eliza.
It said, "Please, please, as you are a gentleman, burn this letter and be at the gate by 10 o'clock." And the initials were L.L.
And you've no idea who L.L. is?
No, sir.
Very good, Barrymore. You and your wife may go.
Thank you, sir. And God bless you, sir. L.L.
Good day, Doctor.
Ah, Dr. Mortimer. Hello.
Been taking a walk?
Yes, I've been right round the Black Tor.
Oh, let me give you a lift home, then.
Oh, thank you. Ah.
That old Giselle bullet does bother me occasionally.
Ah, yes. Very damp down here, of course.
Yes.
Yep. I'm very upset, Dr. Watson. My spaniel has disappeared.
Oh.
Yes, little curly-haired chap. Wandered off into the moor and never came back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Any news of Sherlock Holmes?
Well, very little. He acknowledges my reports, but he doesn't say much. Oh, Mortimer, you know, is there a woman living around here with the initials L.L.?
Not that I know of. L.L. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, of course there is. Laura Lyons of Coombe Tracy.
Who is she?
Married some artist fellow called Lyons who came sketching on the moors. He walked out on her and now the poor girl hasn't a penny.
How does she live?
Oh, several of us have helped her. Stapleton's, a Charles. So have I. She's managed to start a little typewriting business. Why do you ask?
Oh, just curiosity. Mrs. Lyons?
I don't think we've met, Mr.
Dr. Watson.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do? It was about the late Sir Charles Baskerville that I've come to see you.
What can I tell you about him?
You knew him, didn't you?
Yes. I owe a great deal to his kindness.
Did you correspond with him?
What is the object of this interrogation?
To avoid a public scandal.
Yes. I did write once or twice to Sir Charles to acknowledge his generosity.
How did he know enough about your affairs to be able to help you?
Through my friend, Mr. Stapleton.
Did you ever write to Sir Charles asking him to meet you?
Really, sir? That's an extraordinary question.
I'm sorry, madam. I must repeat it.
Then I answer, certainly not.
Not on the very day of Sir Charles's death?
No.
Surely your memory deceives you. Didn't you write, "Please, please burn this letter and be at the gate by 10 o'clock"?
Is there no such thing as a gentleman?
You do Sir Charles an injustice, madam. He did burn the letter, but sometimes a letter may be legible in part even when burned.
I see.
You admit now that you wrote it?
Yes. I believe that if I could see him, I could gain his help.
Well, what happened when you got there?
I never went.
Mrs. Lyons.
I swear it on all I hold sacred. Something intervened to prevent my going.
What?
That is a private matter.
Why were you so pressing that Sir Charles should destroy the letter?
Dr. Watson, I've told you. The matter is a private
one. All the more reason to avoid a public investigation.
You probably know that I made a rash marriage and have had reason to regret it.
Yes, I've heard something of the kind.
My husband has made my life one incessant persecution.
Oh, dear.
I'd learned that there was a possibility of regaining my freedom if certain expenses could be met.
Mm.
And I thought that if Sir Charles heard the story from my own lips, he might help me.
Then why didn't you go?
Because I received help in the interval from another source.
Then why didn't you write to Sir Charles and explain?
I was going to. Then the next morning, I heard that he had died.
Watson, I thought you'd got lost on the moors. Come on, your lunch is waiting for you.
No, thank you. No, I didn't get lost. I was driving back from Mrs. Lyons, and Mortimer stopped me. Said he'd forgotten to tell me that he has observed a boy
go up every day towards those stone huts on the hill. Regular as dockwork.
That's odd. Oh, Barrymore. Dr. Watson's here now.
Very good, sir.
Oh, and Barrymore. Do you know anything about a boy going up on the moors? Is he anything to do with that precious relation of yours?
No, sir. I think he takes food to that other man.
What other man?
I don't know, sir. Selden says he's not a convict. He says he's living in one of those stone huts, and the boy brings him up food from one of the villages.
But he doesn't know who he is?
No, sir. He doesn't like it. Neither do we, sir, I can tell you. Waiting for something, he seems to be. A foul play somewhere, sir, I'll swear it.
What else can it be?
Do you think it's that same fellow who was following you about in London?
Ah.
I'd better send a report by telegraph. No, I'll do better than that. I'll go up onto the moor this evening.
Well, I'll come with you.
No, I can't permit it.
Huh?
That was Holmes's last word to me. Keep him off the moor, especially after dark. And it'll be close on dark by the time I get there.
But, my dear fellow...
Don't worry, I'll take my revolver. There's only one hut there with a roof on, that'll be the one. I'll creep up and surprise him. Or if he isn't there, I'll sit and wait for him.
Well, he's probably dangerous.
I can look after myself. Do you realize, Sir Henry, this fellow may be the key to the whole mystery? He gave us the slip in Regent Street thanks to his handsome cab. Well, he won't do it up there. Ha, who knows? For once I may succeed where even Holmes has failed.
The sun was already sinking when I reached the summit. Down beneath me, in the cleft, was a circle of old stone huts. One with sufficient roof to act as a screen against the weather. I went down to it, threw away my cigarette, closed my hand on my revolver, and went in. It was empty. But there were ample signs that this was where the man lived. With tingling nerves, I sat in the dark recesses of the hut and waited for the coming of its tenant. Then, at last, I heard it. At last! Last!
It's a lovely evening, Watson. I really think you'd be more comfortable outside than in.
Holmes! Holmes!
And please be careful with that revolver.
Oh, my dear Holmes, I was never more glad to see anyone in my life. How did you know I was in there?
Watson, if you seriously desire to surprise me, you must change your tobacconist.
Oh, my cigarette end?
Yes. You threw it down, no doubt, at that supreme moment when you charged into the empty house.
Mr. Holmes, how in the name of wonder did you get here? I thought you were in Baker Street working on that case of blackmailing.
That was what I wished you to.
Oh, so you use me but don't trust me. I think I deserve better at your hands, Holmes.
Oh, my dear fellow, you've been invaluable as always. You must forgive me. If I'd been with you, it would have put our opponents on their guard.
So my reports have all been wasted?
Not a bit of it. I made excellent arrangements. Your reports were only delayed one day on their way. So unless anything of consequence has happened today...
Ah, then at least I have some news for you. I've been over to see a Mrs. Laura Lyons at Coombe Tracy.
Well done. We've obviously been working on parallel lines. What did you learn?
Well, she made an appointment with Sir Charles at the gate. She admits that.
Sir?
She wanted money to help her divorce.
What?
But she never went. Something happened to make her change her mind, but she wouldn't tell me what. She also said that she first got in touch with Sir Charles through Stapleton.
Ah, now that's important. It bridges the gap. You're aware, I suppose, that there's a close intimacy between the lady and Stapleton.
No, I didn't know that.
There's no doubt about it. Now, this puts a very powerful weapon into our hands. If I can only use it to detach Stapleton's wife.
His wife?
Why, yes. The lady who passes for his sister is his wife.
Good heavens, why the elaborate deception?
Because he foresaw that she'd be more used to him as a free woman.
Then, is he our enemy? Was it he who dogged us in London?
So I read the riddle.
Stapleton. And the warning letter, that must have come from her.
Exactly.
But Holmes, how do you know this woman's his wife?
Because he so far forgot himself as to give you a true piece of autobiography when he first met you. There's no one easier to trace than a schoolmaster.
Then where does Mrs. Laura Lowndes come in?
That's where your interviewer shed a light. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about her projected divorce. It means that if she thought Stapleton was unmarried, she counted, no doubt, on becoming his wife.
And when she is undeceived?
Why, then, we may find the lady of service. But don't you think you're away from your charge rather long, Watson? It's dark already. Your place is at Baskerville Hall.
Holmes, one last question. What's the meaning of it all? What's Stapleton after?
It is murder, Watson. Refined, cold-blooded, deliberate murder.
But don't
ask me for particulars. My nets are closing on him even as his are, Sir Henry. He's almost at our mercy.
My God, what's that?
Where is it?
The hound! Great heavens, if we're too late! Come, Watson, come!
You hear that? He's beaten us, Watson.
Oh, no, surely not.
Fool that I was to hold my hand. And you, Watson, see what comes of abandoning your charge. By heaven, if the worst has happened, we'll avenge him. Come quickly, let's find him.
Yes. Yes. It's Sir Henry, poor devil. Do you remember that spacesuit he wore when he first came to our rooms in Baker Street?
Yes, indeed. Oh, his skull's crushed. Oh, the brute! Holmes, I shall never forgive myself.
I'm more to blame than you, Watson. But how could I know that he'd risk his life on the moor in the face of all my warnings?
Where's this brute of a hound that drove him to death? He may be lurking among the rocks at this very moment. Where's Stapleton?
He shall answer for this.
He shall. I'll see to that.
Well, there's a light in his cottage. Why don't we go and seize him at once?
No. Our case is not complete. One false move and he may escape us yet. All we can do now is to perform the last offices for our poor friend. Come on, Watson.
Yes.
Help me to turn him over on his back.
And then we can... Good heavens, Holmes, are you mad?
Watson, look! This man has a beard.
A beard?
It's not the baronet at all. It's...
Why? Is my neighbor the convict?
The suit, it's Sir Henry's. You said so. Oh, of course, now I see it. He gave Barrymore some of his suits, and Barrymore must have passed them on to Selden.
Then the clothes have been the poor fellow's death.
Oh.
Obviously, the hound was laid on from some article of Sir Henry's.
The boot that was stolen at the hotel?
Probably. There's one curious thing, though. It was dark. So how did Selden know the hound was on his trail?
Must have heard it.
That wouldn't make a hard man like Selden scream with terror. How did he know?
Hello, Watson. Hmm? What's this? Here's Stapleton himself by all that's wonderful and audacious. Careful now, not a word to show your suspicions.
Why, Dr. Watson, that's you, is it not?
Yes.
You're the last person I should have expected to see on the moor at this time of night. But, dear me, what's this? Somebody hurt? Not... Don't tell me it's our friend Sir Henry. What a terrible... Who's this?
Selden. The man who escaped from Princetown.
Oh, dear me, but how?
He appears to have broken his neck by falling over these rocks. My friend and I were strolling on the moor when we heard a cry. Oh,
so did I. That's what brought me out. I was uneasy about Sir Henry.
Why about Sir Henry in particular?
Because I had suggested he should come over.
I see.
By the way, did you hear anything else besides a cry?
No. Did you?
No.
What do you mean, then?
Oh, you know the stories the peasants tell about a phantom hound. I wondered if there was any evidence of such a sound tonight.
There we are, nothing of the kind.
What's your theory of this poor fellow's death, Mr. Holmes?
You are quick at identification.
We've been expecting you in these parts since Dr. Watson came down. You're in time to see a tragedy.
Yes, indeed. I shall take an unpleasant remembrance back with me to London tomorrow.
Oh, you'll return tomorrow.
That is my intention.
I do hope your visit has cast some light on these occurrences that are puzzling us all.
One cannot always have the success for which one hopes. It has not been a satisfactory case.
I would suggest carrying this poor fellow back to my house, but it'd give my sister such a fright. So I think if we put something over his face, he'll be safe until morning.
Yes. His coat. Yes. But we must inform the authorities. And now our place is with Sir Henry.
And I must return to my sister. She'll be nervous there on her own. Good night, then, Mr. Holmes.
Goodbye, sir.
Good night, Dr. Watson.
Well, Sylvia.
What a nerve the fellow has. We're at close grips at last.
Sorry he's seen you.
So was I at first, but there was no getting out of it.
How will it affect him, do you think?
It may make him more cautious, or it may drive him to desperate measures. Mm-hmm. Like most clever criminals, he may be too confident and imagine he's completely deceived us.
What will you do now? Come up to the hall?
Yes. Yes, I see no reason for further concealment. Mm. But one last word, Watson. Say nothing of the hound to Sir Henry. Let him think Selden's death was a Stapleton would have us believe.
When we arrived, I had the unpleasant task of breaking the news of Selden's death to the Barrymores. To him, it may have been an unmitigated relief, but she wept bitterly in her apron. Evil indeed is the man who has not one woman to mourn him. Sir Henry raised his eyebrows when he found that Holmes had no luggage and no explanation for its absence, but between us, we soon supplied his wants and sat down to a belated supper.
I've been moping about the house all day since Watson here went off in the morning. If I hadn't sworn not to go out alone, I might have accepted Stapleton's invitation and had a more lively evening.
You might have indeed. Sir Henry, I don't suppose you appreciate that we've been mourning over you under the impression you'd broken your neck.
What's that?
This poor wretch was dressed in your clothes. I fear your servant who gave them to him may be in trouble with the police.
No, I don't think so. There was no mark on them, as far as I know.
That's lucky for him. In fact, it's lucky for all of you.
What?
Yes, you're all on the wrong side of the law. Do you know, I'm not sure that as a conscientious detective, my first duty isn't to arrest the whole household.
Really?
Watson's reports are very incriminating documents.
But how about the case? If you can muzzle that hound and put him on a chain, I'll be ready to swear that you're the greatest detective of all time.
I think I can do it. If you give me your help.
I'll do whatever you tell me.
Very good. I shall ask you to do it blindly, without asking the reason.
Just as you like.
If you'll do this, I think the chances are that...
Was that a home?
I was admiring your family portraits. They are all family portraits.
The West Indies. And the man with the blue coat and roll of paper is Sir William Baskerville, who was chairman of committees in the House of Commons under Pitt.
Uh-huh. This cavalier in the black velvet and the lace.
Ah. That's the cause of all the mischief. The wicked Hugo, who started the Hound of the Baskervilles. We're not likely to forget him.
Dear me. He seems a quiet, meek-mannered man. But I dare say there was a lurking devil in his eyes. I had pictured him as a more robust and ruffianly person.
No, that's him all right. The name and date are on the back of the canvas.
Mm.
Well, I think we could manage another bottle of hock, don't you?
Oh, thank you.
I'll go and get it from the cellar. I won't bother Barrymore tonight. His wife's so upset with the news about Selden.
Watson, that portrait of Hugo Baskerville. Look at it carefully. Is it like anyone you know?
Well, something to say, Henry, about the jaw.
Just a suggestion, perhaps, but wait a minute. Now then, if I cover the broad plumed hat,
yes,
and the long ringlets. So, now look at it.
Good heavens, it's stapled.
Ah, you can see it now.
Yes.
My eyes have been trained to examine faces and not their trimming.
But this is marvelous. It might be his portrait.
Yes, it's an interesting example of a throwback, both physical and spiritual.
The fellow's a Baskerville.
Really?
With designs on the succession.
Yes. We have him, Watson. We have him. A pin, a cork, and a card, and we add him to the Baker Street collection.
Here we are. Well, you look like a general planning a battle with his chief of staff.
That's exactly the situation.
Oh. Well, what are my orders?
I understand that tomorrow night you are engaged to dine with the Stapletons.
Yes. Yes, they're very hospitable people.
Well, thank you.
I hope you'll come too.
Oh, I'm afraid Watson and I must go to London.
To London? Tomorrow?
Yes, I think we shall be more useful there at the moment.
Well, I'd hoped you were going to see me through this business.
My dear fellow, you must trust me implicitly. Tell your friends that we should have been happy to come with you, but that urgent business has called us to town. Will you give them that message?
Well, if you insist, Mr. Holmes.
One more direction. I want you to drive to Merripit House, but send your trap back and let them know you intend to walk home.
What's that, Holmes?
Walk home alone across the moor?
Yes.
But that's the very thing you told me not to do.
This time you must. I have every confidence in your nerve and courage, or I wouldn't suggest it. It's essential that you should do it.
Then I shall do it.
But whatever you do, stick to the path that leads from Merripit House to the Grimpen Road. Don't leave that path for an instant, as you value your life.
The next morning, the trap took us to the station of Coombe Tracey. But instead of taking the train, Holmes inquired at the station master's office and was given a telegram.
What do you got there, Holmes?
Ah. Capital. Listen, Watson. Wire received, coming down with unsigned warrant, arrived 5:40, Lestrade.
You sent for Lestrade?
Yes. He's the best of the professionals. I think we may need him.
So we're not going to London?
No. But everything depends on Sir Henry believing that we have gone. All we have to do is to keep out of the way. And I think we might well employ our time by calling on your acquaintance, Mrs. Laura Lyons. When she learns of the deception that Stapleton practiced on her, I think the result may be of interest to us.
White? What are you mean, his wife? Mr. Stapleton is not a married man.
I'm afraid you're mistaken, Mrs. Lyons.
Prove it to me. Prove it to me, and if you cannot...
I've come prepared to do so. Here is a photograph of the couple taken in York 4 years ago.
Let me see.
It's endorsed Mr. and Mrs. Vandeleur. But you'll have no difficulty in recognizing him. Her, too, if you know her by sight.
Oh. Mr. Holmes. This man offered me marriage. If I could get a divorce from my husband. He has lie to me.
He has indeed.
Ask me what you like. I'll hold nothing back.
Very well. Was the sending of the letter to Sir Charles suggested to you by Stapleton?
He dictated it.
So that you could meet the legal expenses of your divorce?
Yes.
And then after you had sent the letter, he dissuaded you from keeping the appointment?
Yes. He told me it would hurt his self-respect if anyone else found the money.
And later, after Sir Charles's death, he made you remain silent about your appointment?
He said that if I spoke, I should be suspected of murder.
Well, I think on the whole you've had a very fortunate escape. You had him in your power and he knew it. And yet you're alive.
I still can't believe it.
I assure you, Mrs. Lyons, for several months you've been walking on the edge of a precipice. Now I must wish you good morning. There he is.
Good evening, Lestrade.
Holmes.
Good evening to you.
Good evening, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, Lestrade?
Got anything good, gentlemen?
The biggest thing for years. Well, we have 2 hours before we need think of starting. I think we might employ it in getting some dinner, don't you?
Suits me.
And then, Lestrade, we'll take the London fog out of your throat by giving you a breath of the pure night air of Dartmoor.
Because I've never been on Dartmoor.
Well, I don't suppose you'll forget your first visit.
Oh.
Come along. You can stop here, driver.
Thanks,
we'll proceed on foot from this point.
Oh,
now, I'll settle with the driver and send him off.
Oh,
then, Ryder, thank you for a very
pleasant. My word, Doctor. The air's got a bite to it.
We're on the open moor.
There's dampness in it, too, though.
Yes, well, just down there is the great Grimpen Mire.
Where the fog is? Yes.
That's right. It's one of the most dangerous places on Dartmoor.
Oh. Are you armed, Lestrade?
As long as I have my trousers, I have a hip pocket. As long as I have a hip pocket, I have something in it. But you're mighty close about this affair, Mr. Holmes. What's the game?
A waiting game.
Oh, my word, it's not a very cheerful place, is it? Just dark and empty, except for that light over there.
That's Merripit House, and the end of our journey.
Oh.
Now, I'll lead the way along the moor path.
Right.
I must ask you to walk on tiptoe and not to raise your voices. Inside the house, you know the lie of the land. Creep forward quietly and see what they're doing. And for heaven's sake, don't let them know that they're watched.
All right, Holmes.
Well, Watson.
The Pullman and Sir Henry are sitting there smoking cigars. Stapleton's doing the talking.
Where's the lady?
I didn't see her.
What?
Stapleton got up at one point, went to an outhouse in the corner of the orchard. He unlocked it and went in with a curious scuffling noise.
How long was he there?
Only a minute or two, and then he went back and rejoined Sir Henry.
Mr. Holmes, it looks as if that fog is coming up from the mire.
I know, Lestrade. Confound it. It's the one thing on earth I didn't bargain for.
Serious, Holmes?
Very serious indeed. It could ruin all our plans.
What?
What's the time?
10 o'clock. It can't be long now.
His life depends on his coming out before the fog is over that path. If he isn't out in a few minutes, the path will be covered. We shan't be able to see our hands in front of us.
Shall we move further back on the higher ground?
No. We daren't take the risk of his being overtaken before we can help him. At all costs, we must remain where we are. Oh, God. Why doesn't he come? Ah, there's the front door. He's coming now. Quiet.
Thank you.
Here he comes. Shall we call to him? No. Have your pistols ready.
All right, Mr. Holmes.
He stopped. Has he heard something? No, he's coming on. There he is, looking over his shoulder. He's terrified.
Holmes, why don't we let him know we're here?
No, I said no. This is the moment, Watson, the supreme moment. Quiet.
The hound! He's coming after him. But where?
Don't confound this fog.
Holmes, look there. In his mouth, his eyes.
The thing's on fire.
Merciful God.
It's something out of hell.
There. It's on him.
Got it.
Well done, Watson. The thing's mortal. If we can wound it, we can kill it. Come on now, both of you. All right.
It's dead. Watson, see to Sir Henry.
Oh, he's fainted. He'll recover, though. We were just in time.
Here's a flask of brandy.
Oh, thank you, Lestrade. Right. Here's some of this, Danny. Steady. You're all right. Come, have a little more.
Oh, God. What was it? In heaven's name, what was it?
Whatever it was, it's dead. We've laid the family ghost once and for all.
Look at the size of the brute.
Oh, those dreadful flames. Even now, the mouth's on fire.
And the eyes. Look at the eyes.
Oh, don't worry. It's phosphorus. Look, I've got it in my fingers now.
Osmanus?
Yes. And a very cunning preparation of it. There's no smell to interfere with the animal's power of scent. Oh, Sir Henry, we owe you a deep apology. I was prepared for a hound, but not for such a creature as this.
You saved my life.
Having first endangered it.
Watson, give me another mouthful of that brandy.
Come on, here we are. Harold, good sweet. That's it.
Oh, that's better. Huh? That's better. Good. Now, if come you'll on. Help me up a little.
That's it.
Thank you.
You stand right.
Yes, thank you. What do you propose to do now?
To leave you here. You're not fit for further adventures tonight. If you wait, one or other of us will go back with you to the hall.
Right.
Now, we must finish our work. We have our case. We only want our man. Watson, Lestrade, right. Come along. Yeah. Every moment's of importance. To Merripit House.
Right, Mr.
As I thought, not a sign of him. He'll have heard our shots and escaped.
This door's locked.
Keep still. Listen. Do you hear that? Stand aside and be ready to rush in. I'm going to kick this lock in.
Oh, Mrs. Stapleton.
Oh, the poor wretch. Quick, Watson, help me untie her. Get that gag out of her mouth.
Holmes. Oh, look at that whiplash on her neck. Some brute.
Here, yeah, madam. Sip this brandy.
Has he escaped?
He cannot escape us, madam.
Then I'm in Sir Henry.
Yes.
And the hound.
Dead.
Thank God. Thank God. Oh. See how he's treated me. I hate him.
Then help us. Tell us where we can find him.
There's only one place he can have fled to. The old tin mine.
Where?
On an island in the heart of the mire. That's where he kept the hound, and that's where he'll be.
But look at the fog. No one could find his way into Grimpen Mire tonight.
Yes, he couldn't see the guiding wands tonight.
What do you mean, ma'am?
We planted them together to mark the pathway through the mire.
I see.
Oh, if only I could have plucked them out today. Then you'd have him at your mercy.
Well, it's no use our going after him till the fog lifts. Lestrade, will you stay on here?
Certainly, Mr. Holmes.
Watson, we must take Sir Henry back to Baskerville Hall. Mrs. Stapleton, if the weather is cleared, we will call for you tomorrow morning.
The next morning, Mrs. Stapleton guided Holmes, Lestrade, and myself to the edge of the bog. We left her standing on the firm, peaty soil and began to follow the small wands that showed the zigzagging path through the foul quagmire. Its grip clutched at our heels as we walked, as if some malignant hand were tugging us down.
We're nearly there, Watson.
Thank heavens for that, eh, Lestrade? You get a good firm London pavement every time.
Hello?
What?
Look, Watson. There's something in the mud. Just to the right there.
Now leave it, Holmes. You'll get caught. Look out, sir.
Give me a hand. That's
got it. Oh,
look at this.
An old boot. Why risk your life for that, sir?
Look at the maker's name, Watson.
Yes. Myers, Toronto.
Exactly. Wasn't that worth a mud bath?
Oh, sir.
Sir Henry's missing boot. The one that was stolen from his London hotel. Stapleton must have used it to set the hound on his track and then thrown it away in his flight when he knew the game was up.
You got as far as here, then?
Yes. Come on. Let's see what else we can learn.
Let's see. It can't be very far now.
But more than that, we were never destined to know. When we reached the firmer ground, we looked eagerly about us. There were many traces of Stapleton's habitation. The chain where the animal was kept, the bones that it gnawed, the remains even of Mortimer's poor little curly-haired spaniel, and the tin of luminous paint that had been used to make the hound glow with fire. But of the man himself, no sign met our eyes. If the earth told a true story, then he never reached that island of refuge. Somewhere in the foul slime of Grimpen Mire, this cold and cruel-hearted man is forever buried. Towards the end of November, Sir Henry Baskerville and Dr. Mortimer were in London on the first stage of a voyage round the world to calm Sir Henry's shattered nerves. They called on us one raw and foggy afternoon, and the four of us sat and talked round a cheerful fire in our sitting room in Baker Street.
Hello, Mr. Holmes. There are still one or two things about the case that puzzle me.
I'll do my best to clarify them.
Well, was Stapleton really a relative of mine?
Oh, yes, beyond all question. He was the son of Roger Baskerville, old Sir Charles's younger brother, who fled under a cloud to South America.
Ah, and Mrs. Stapleton?
She was a Costa Rican beauty by name Beryl Garcia. He stole some money, changed his name to Vandeleur, and brought her to England with him.
And was his knowledge of Lepidoptera all a pretense? He seemed such an expert.
No, that was the one true thing about him. The British Museum recognized him as an authority. Why, he even has a moth named after him. The Vandeleur.
Really? Tell me, where on earth did he find that fearsome hound?
In London. He bought it from Ross and Mangles, the dealers in Fulham Road. He took it down by the North Devon line and walked it over the moor so as to get it home without exciting notice. Mm-hmm. But then one thing upset his plans. He had to decoy Sir Charles onto the moor at night, but his wife refused to help him. Threats and even, I'm sorry to say, blows failed to move her. So, as we know, he laid his plot with Mrs. Laura Lyons.
But did neither of these ladies suspect anything?
Probably both did. But they were both under his influence. And his main accomplice was a dumb animal who could never give him away.
Indeed.
Then your arrival on the scene, Sir Henry, brought him to London with his wife. He dared not leave her behind.
Then she sent me that note of warning.
Yes. I knew all along that it had been sent by a woman.
How could you know that?
Do you remember when I examined that piece of notepaper for watermarks?
Yes.
In doing so, I was conscious of the scent known as white jessamine. It's very necessary for the criminal expert to be able to distinguish between the 75 perfumes.
Mr. Holmes, tell me, was Mrs. Stapleton in love with her husband?
She certainly feared him. She may have loved him. The two are by no means incompatible. But on the day of the crisis, she turned against him. Well, now, gentlemen, may I suggest that for the rest of the evening, we turn our thoughts into more pleasant channels.
Yes, I
have a box for Les Huguenots.
Oh.
Have you heard that a rescue?
No, no, I don't.
Yeah, perhaps we can stop at Marcini's for a little dinner on the way.
Oh, what a beautiful idea. Yes,
that was The Hound of the Baskervilles by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, adapted for radio by Felix Felton. Sherlock Holmes was played by Carlton Hobbs and Dr. Watson by Norman Shelley. Mr. Stapleton by Michael Bilton, Sir Henry Baskerville by Manning Wilson, Dr. Mortimer by Kenneth Dight, Beryl Stapleton by Dorrit Wells, Laura Lyons by Shirley Cooklin, Barrymore by Charles Simon, Eliza Barrymore by Gladys Spencer, Lestrade by Humphrey Morton, Perkins by William Eagle, and The Postmaster by Anthony Hall. The recorded production was by Robin Midgley.